Hello and welcome to another episode of Software Should Be Free with your host, Tim Abel of Charm Consulting Limited, doing C-sharp things, and the Rust Workshop doing Rust things. So today I want to talk about testing, which is about the oldest subject in software there is. And it's come up because I've had a couple of experiences lately which have really sharpened my thinking around software tests. And I was chatting with a colleague the other day and discussing the pros and cons of some different approaches to testing. And I thought it would be really good to share like where I've got to based on some experiences working with some really excellent people and some who had some really sharp ideas about what makes for good test coverage that's really crystallized some really important things for me that are really a bit late for me. Sadly, I wish I'd come to these things earlier, like many things in software, but I'm here now, so that's always a positive, even if, you know, better late than never, eh? So I've written a blog post the other day about why do automated tests matter. It's 27th of March 24. That was an explanation of some of the things that I'll cover in here. The conversation I was having recently was about whether tests should have access to the internals of a system. Which is an interesting question, and I've got a lot better at being able to explain the fundamental reasons why you might make a decision one way or the other. So let's start with why. Wind it all the way back. Like, why do we even bother writing tests? I don't know if you are in the same camp, my one dear listener. Hello, David. where it came across sort of testing as a TDD thing, possibly out of the Rails community, because they were very, very noisy about testing. And I kind of learned about testing more as a like unit test, kind of like test your class, and this is how you mock things out, and this is how you avoid tricky dependencies. With a bit of a nod to integration testing, but fundamentally, that was kind of about as far as it went. And the result of that was I would somewhat haphazardly write tests. So I knew that tests would help prevent regressions in software, but I couldn't really work out like what shape my test coverage should be. So maybe I would look at like code coverage as a reasonable metric of like, you know, have I covered all the edges here? I did dabble in BDD kind of things. Particularly there was a library I wrote where it had a pretty well-defined spec, so that lent itself to kind of BDD style coverage. And I've had some reasonable successes with, you know, where I've got a stakeholder, like a business analyst or someone who understands the business, and I can write specs in their terms. But there's a lot of testing I've seen where it's just really gone off the rails for all sorts of reasons. You know, test coverage is there, but the system breaks in other ways, or test coverage seems good, but then the system breaks for the user in something that's supposed to have already been delivered, like some feature breaks. And then there's a scramble, and maybe you add a test, and you know, is that good enough? Don't know. You know, what is the bar here for the tests? So to jump to kind of more recently and the better thinking that's come my way, I'm going to pull some bits out of the blog post, so, you know, excuse me if I scroll up and down a little bit here. You might hear my mouse scrolling. So let's go all the way back to some axioms, some like obviously true statements that Hopefully you will not find any particular reason to disagree with, and these are going to be some of the foundations of leading to a really high quality test coverage for a system. So the first axiom is that it doesn't really matter whether a particular class has a test or a particular piece of your software has a test per se, like in the TDD style. What actually really matters is, as perceived by the user of your software, does it do what they need? So that's the first axiom. And what do users care about generally? They care about features and maybe some non-functionals. And how do you build up software? Well, a feature at a time, really. I mean, ideally, you know, you start with a thin thread that runs all the way through. So, you know, you'll ship something basically empty all the way through to production if you're doing a SaaS kind of thing or an API. And then you'll just like keep expanding it out, knowing that it works all the time, and you'll have tests that make sure that everything that you've got still works. And the challenge is when you add the first feature to your software, it's, and this is the second axiom. So when you add your first feature, it's really easy to be sure that that works. You know, you can fire up your API or run it yourself or look at the user interface. So, you know, it could be tempting to skip writing a test for that because, you know, it's not super hard. Or maybe you put a couple of tests in so you feel like you're a good developer. You know, you're doing your TDD thing or whatever, but you know, maybe the first feature doesn't seem to matter that much. The key thing in this axiom is that when you write your 99th feature, you want to be certain that the other 98 features that you have already written are all still functioning. And when I say features, I mean things that the user cares about. So the axiom here is, when you write your 99th feature, you want to be sure that the other 98 features work. Now, whether you do that through manual testing or through automated testing isn't the point of the axiom. The point is, you don't want regressions in your software, and you don't want regressions no matter whether you're writing your first feature or your 99th feature or your 1000th feature. So where does that leave us, and how is that helpful in thinking about testing? So there's some things that follow from this logically, which can present some pretty serious challenges in terms of actually making this really good and really work well. But nonetheless, there are challenges that have to be overcome in order to have a really great, reliable system and to be able to continue your delivery velocity. So with the ability to deliver the 99th or 999th feature with confidence, the implication of that is that you cannot rely on manual testing in any way, shape or form, because as soon as you relent on top quality test coverage, then you are building up technical debt. And the amount of time that you would have to spend manually testing to be certain that you haven't broken anything is exponential with the amount of features that you have. So some organizations like to hire QA people, quality assurance people, who'll do a bunch of manual testing with the theory that they take the load off the developers and check for quality. This doesn't work in the long run, because even a large dedicated QA team cannot realistically regression test a significantly complicated system to completeness without automation. So the implication of the second axiom is all of your test coverage has to be automated in order to sustain your velocity. And it's even worse than it first appears, because as soon as you slip even slightly in either not covering things or allowing any kind of manual test coverage to be in place, you can now not iterate so fast and with such confidence. So your velocity suffers fairly badly, like much more badly than the inexperienced technical people or non-technical people might think. The consequence of the first axiom, which is it's not about whether your class has tests, but it's whether the software as perceived by the user does the job that they actually want, is that you have to write your tests in a more outside-in fashion. There's a terminology problem in testing, so we don't really know what integration tests are anymore, we don't really know what acceptance tests are anymore, etc., because they've all been used for all sorts of things. Outside-in seems to still be relatively uncontaminated as a term, and by that I mean if the user is on the outside of the system, even if it's like an API user, how the system behaves from that perspective is what matters. So the consequence of this really is the test pyramid, in a way, which is that the tests that matter the most are the tests that test the outside of the system. In an unrealistic ideal, where tests ran instantly, no matter how big or complicated they were, then you could theoretically write all of your tests at this outer layer and not write any internal tests or unit tests or component tests. In practice, you run into the fact that, you know, when you're testing an explosion of variations, like a combinatorial explosion, because you've got, say, you know, three parameters that you can wiggle and you theoretically would have to test all variations of them, then you probably want to test a proportion of those outside in, like from the highest level, the user's perspective, but then push down some of the variation tests into the inner things just to retain the speed of feedback that your tests give you. But fundamentally, the point still stands. It's whether the user thinks the software is still behaving is the thing that really matters, and your tests should reflect that. So in terms of how that affects what your test coverage in a system looks like, that's fairly profound. If you like me came from the like bottom up, oh well, we should write TDD and I wonder if we've got good coverage, there's a tendency for those systems to be quite heavy on unit testing but really quite poor on testing from the user's perspective. Whereas if you take on this pair of axioms, then it will encourage you, or force you more precisely, to write tests where the end-to-end, like outside-in, user-facing tests are the thing, and that's the coverage that matters. It's not about lines of code, it's about can you prove that each feature still works? And for one of the things that makes this harder to do is these tests are actually harder to write. There's some fairly significant barriers that are often in place in writing these tests. So there's an extra incentive for developers who haven't really thought this through quite clearly enough to retreat and do the easy things. Like, well, you know, if all test coverage is equal, well, I'll do unit tests or I'll do some small integration tests because I can, you know, I've got a feature to ship. You know, we're in a rush. Everyone's under pressure. We're always under pressure. There's never enough time. I've got all my previous tech debt to deal with, and I just don't have time to go and rewrite this whole thing or build this whole new framework. But quite often, if you want to prove that from the user's point of view something works, then you might have to deal with some tricky things. Like, you know, the user might care if an email was delivered. And, well, how do you test that? Well, you know, there's an interaction with another system. Maybe you've got a microservices architecture and what the user cares about is not at all any of your individual microservices. They care about the whole thing. So now you have to write some kind of platform test that tests the surface of an entire system, poking systems that belong to multiple teams in multiple services that are deployed separately. This is not trivial stuff. So, you know, your feature might be effectively delivered as, you know, modify this one microservice, but does it work if another microservice it depends on is down or broken, or there's a contract failure between the two. Well, from the user's point of view, your system's broken. So the implication of axiom number one is you have to do the hard work that it takes to build like test infrastructure and kind of non-standard test stuff that you need to do that outside-in testing. Just a note on SpecFlow and Gherkin and BDD and what have you. BDD is a sadly a horribly abused thing and often misunderstood. So in theory, its origins are, you know, feature and user-based things. The Gherkin syntax allows you to describe in plain English, in theory, what a system does, and then you turn those into executable steps and you verify them. And that fits with kind of what I'm saying, but unfortunately there's a couple of things where this goes off the rails. I think it's RSpec, and in .NET land it's SpecFlow. You have to write these kind of step matches where the plain English gets matched and turned into some actual executable code. And it turns out in practice that this is actually a significant overhead. And the other thing where this has really gone off the rails is people think that because BDD was quite often outside in, it quite often ended up having to automate browsers in order to test it as the user perceived it, which is a good thing. People then started to think, particularly people who were new to the industry in some way, started to think that BDD meant writing SpecFlow, Gherkin syntax tests, and automating the browser. And then they would do tests that the user wouldn't care about, so that they were like, you know, some variations or input testing or failure modes. And because it was driving the browser and it was written in Gherkin, then they'd cargo culted their way to something that looked a little bit like BDD, but it wasn't BDD. It was basically a much harder way of writing a bunch of programmer-focused tests. So it's important not to conflate the technology with the actual objective. So the BDD objective is still good and fits fairly well with what I'm suggesting, but the actual practicalities of Gherkin and SpecFlow and browser automation, not so much. It depends on your system, what you need. Just to carry on down that particular tangent, I would generally only recommend Gherkin syntax, the sort of given when then in plain text files, if you have a specific user for those. So the situations where I've had that work well is where I have had someone in the business who can read and verify these things and maybe even edit them. If it's only programmers or QAs that are reading and modifying these files, then it's an overhead that you just don't want, and you might as well just write your tests in code, even if they're outside in, because the main user of that code is a programmer. So, where have we got to? I've rambled on, but hopefully you're following the thread here. So, the two axioms are, it's the user's perception of the software that matters, and you need to have automated test coverage in order to keep your velocity up as you write your 99th or 999th feature. And this drives us into outside-in testing and full automation of testing. And you can see that if you fail on either of these, then if your automation testing is not up to scratch, your delivery speed will eventually fall off as you heroically try to manually test everything or give up and accept regressions. And if your testing isn't from the user's perspective, then you will have gaps from the user's perspective and regressions will slip through that your automated tests should have caught. And users will be disappointed because, quite rightly, your non-technical users, clients, employers, bosses, as far as they're concerned, if they've paid you a good amount of money, because programmers are well paid, to build a piece of software, and you say to them, okay, I'm going to deliver feature X. Okay, I have delivered features X. Here you go, it's done. If that then turns around and breaks, then your client quite rightly thinks you've done a shoddy job, and the gap in your delivery is in your automated test coverage. That is part of the cost of doing the job. And to continue down that thread of dealing with kind of non-technical people, end clients, end users, and their expectations, a thing that I see quite often happen with engineers particularly is asking permission to do a good job. So I quite often hear the excuse from programmers of like, oh, we didn't have time to write the platform tests for this. You know, we know this is a good idea, but we didn't have time. You know, the boss needed more features and was pushing. And I'm not sure I've had that much luck with this analogy, but I'm going to use it again anyway, which is, for me, a developer asking a non-technical client or even a project manager or someone who's not like a technical expert, like not a master of their craft, whether we should spend some time writing the platform tests or whether we should spend some time writing these end-to-end tests. Like, when we know that these will take extra time, we know that these are hard, we know that we'll have to do a bunch of upfront infrastructure in order to make these work at all. If you turn around and ask your client, they don't know the trade-offs. They don't know what you're talking about. All they see is somebody saying, should I do blah, 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 blah thing? Or should I do something quicker? And all they hear is, would you like it the slow way or the quick way? And as far as they're concerned, you are responsible as the engineering expert for sustaining velocity, like sustaining the delivery of features and the quality of the system in the long run. That is your job as an engineer or as an engineering department or as an engineering lead, like whatever your role is. Like, if you are the engineering expert, your job is to make sure that this system can continue to be delivered on in the long run with quality. And the outside-in testing, automated testing, fully automated testing is just part of that, because you cannot sustain, because of the axioms, you cannot sustain quality delivery in the long run without fully automated outside-in, like user perspective testing in place. So don't ask. The analogy, which I'm going to say, is you, as a homeowner, you do not want your plumber to come and ask you if you would like to have your radiators earthed. I personally, if they asked me, would say, hell yes. But, you know, if you don't really know how these plumbing system works, then you might say, I don't know, you're the expert, what do I have to do? But you're not going to be very happy if you, next time you touch a radiator, you get electrocuted because there was a short and there was no earth. So you are relying on that tradesperson as an expert in plumbing systems, who is qualified in this case, unlike the software profession, to make sure that you're safe. And in terms of the analogy and software, as the person paying for a system, do you want your software developers to say, would you like me to write tests for this system, without explaining correctly that if you don't have these tests, then it's very likely that this thing that you're writing will break later. I would generally start from the point of view of not even bringing this up, because it just seeds confusion and doubt in the minds of someone who is just thinking that they can rely on you to do a good job. Don't mistake that for being secretive. I am absolutely all for working in the open. And if someone wants to know, you know, if someone says, oh, you know, how long is it going to take this to do this feature? And I say 3 months, and they're like, wow, that seems like a really long time. I think that's really simple. Why is that so hard? And I say, well, in order to prevent this feature breaking a month down the line or 6 months down the line, we have to get it under a good test rig in order to be able to prove forever and ever and keep our iteration speed up. But I'm not putting the burden on them to make the decision. I will explain my reasoning, and I will share with them the behind the scenes. And I'll probably, you know, if they're really interested, which is cool when people are really interested in their stuff, you know, I'll maybe share this episode or share the blog post or, you know, explain my thinking. So, yeah, that's the main thing from the blog post of really why automated testing is just so important and why it needs to be outside in. Now, there's another thing that came up, which was a programmer-to-programmer discussion, which I thought was really interesting and is worth talking about in this particular episode on tests. And that is how much knowledge of the internals of your system should the tests have. So if you're, you know, if you're writing unit tests and you're TDDing something, then inherently that has huge knowledge of the internals. But if you come from the opposite end, as I've just been suggesting is really important, then it becomes more of an interesting question. So let's say your tests are driving an API or a browser on a website, and that system that is under test maybe has... let's go with a microservice. Let's not make this overly complicated with a full platform. So let's say we're testing an individual microservice that runs an API. It's probably got a database or some other kind of storage system. Maybe some blob storage or document storage, JSON storage style stuff or something. Maybe it's got messaging in and out. Maybe it's got, well, what else might it have floating around? Redis cache, some internal state, memory things. You know, there's all the edges of this system and all of the internals of the system. And it's, I think it's reasonably obvious to most programmers like what the edges of the system are and what are kind of private and internal to the system. So assuming you haven't got the database exposed to other systems, which you shouldn't in microservices, the microservice should own its own data store, and the only access to that data store should be through APIs, messages, etc. So let's say you're writing a test and your test needs the system to be in a particular state in order to validate the test. So let's just have a simple CRUD app. So, you know, it's a CRUD app that manages widgets. It has the capabilities to create, read, update, delete, list these widgets. It's all done through an API. We'll make it really simple. And all it does is it just relays in and out of a database. So you're writing the test for reading a widget. But that test requires that there is a widget to read. So you fire up your system, and now your first test, so in your arrange act assert, the act would be get widget number 4. But widget number 4 doesn't exist. So what do we do? So you might have the instinct to just fire up a connection to the database and insert it, or some back door into the system where you prepare the state. This also applies to seed data. It also applies to cleanup. So, you know, maybe you want to, you know, have a teardown where you leave things tidy. So the big question is, how much should your tests know about the internals of the system? How much access they should they have? And I am going to argue that the answer is none. And that this is a hard and fast rule that you must not break. And that might be surprising to a lot of people. And I can't claim ownership of this as an idea. I worked on a team who were pretty keen on this, and I got to see firsthand, having worked on lots of systems where there is internal knowledge, a system where this was taken pretty seriously. And in the short term, a bit like not bothering to write tests, it's actually a little bit harder, and it requires you to think a little bit harder, because it is easier to have, you know, some test utility class where you just like, give me the database and, you know, chuck an ID 4 in there. Okay, right. Now, my act is read record 4. Okay, I get that from the API. Yeah, does it look like what I did in my setup? Yeah, okay, it's got, you know, the the various properties on it, and they're all in the right state. You know, can I update it? Yeah, cool. And you know, you write these tests, which are use the backdoor to set up the state, use the front door, like the API, to assert something, and then maybe use the backdoor again to do some cleanup or tidy up or reset or whatever. So the problem with this is, again, about long-term velocity and ability to change things. So there's a couple of aspects to these challenges. So if... let me get this right. So when you write that test and you give it knowledge of the database, what happens when you want to change the way the internals of this system works? So let's say you're a little bit down the line. So, you know, you've got, it's no longer a simple CRUD app. It does quite a bit more. And you decide that you want to do a little bit of cleanup of the way this system works. You know, you've run into some issues repeatedly. Your tests describe the behavior your users expect of the system. You know, you're happy with your test names. It's pretty clear what it's supposed to do. But you just want to do a bit of tidying up inside. And what you will find fairly quickly is that you go to do a refactor or a tidy up, and you run your tests again, and either they don't compile because they know too much and the internals have broken, or they fail because their assumptions about their ability to access the internals of the system have been broken. But the reason those tests exist hasn't changed, and the expectations that they have of how the systems behave in terms of what you were actually trying to assert haven't changed. And if it's a refactor, the behavior of the system shouldn't have changed. A refactor, in the true sense, should improve the internals of the system without changing the visible behavior at all. So why has your test broken? Your test is broken because it knew something about the internals. And now you have a problem, because you might have 100 of these tests. So there's a couple of problems with this. One is, now you're going to be really slowed down. So either you can't do your cleanup because you look at it, you've broken 100 tests, and you think, do you know what, I haven't got time for this. I can't go around fixing up all these tests. Or you decide that you are going to fix it, because maybe it's not as many as 100 tests. And you start changing tests, or you start changing the things that tests do, or the things. The problem with changing tests once they've been written is it makes them less trustworthy. Every time you have to come and change a test, there is a higher risk that they will pass for the wrong reasons, particularly some of the more complicated and hard to follow tests. When you're doing a refactor over there in the bowels of your system, and this random test that you don't entirely understand and you haven't thought about for a year fails, are you truly going to have in your head enough context to change that test correctly so it doesn't fail for the, it doesn't pass for the wrong reasons, you haven't changed the meaning of it, and you haven't effectively made it possible to break a behavior that the user cares about? This is a very real risk. And this isn't just about refactors. So let's say you're adding feature number 432, and feature 432 changes some fundamental of the internal modeling of the system. Now you are forced to do a refactor. The user doesn't expect the other 431 features to change. They didn't say we want these to change. They just wanted feature 432, but because it affects the model of your system, now you have to do a fairly serious piece of work. But if your tests all know too much about the internals, there's a good chance you have 400 tests to change. So your velocity of delivery at quality is going to go through the floor, and your client is going to start wondering why their developers can never get anything done. If, on the other hand, your test didn't know anything about the internals, and they were able to test just from the outside the behavior of the system, then they would not fail. you could rewrite the internals of this system 100 times and the test would not fail. And I have seen this. I've seen a system completely rewritten on the inside and not a single test touched. And that is a very good thing, because you can be very, very confident that that test coverage is still as accurate as it was in the first place, and that all those features still work in the way they were designed. And it's all very well me saying that, but how do you actually do it? The result of it is that your quality stays high, because you have a set of tests that you don't touch that you can prove will satisfy the user's needs over the long haul. Your velocity stays high because you don't get bogged down in having to rewrite all your tests, and you're able to keep your system clean by being able to refactor. And adding another feature means adding another test and doing the internal changes that you need to. And because you know your test suite is good, you can ship with confidence at speed. So you add your new test. If it's green and all your other tests are green, you can just ship it, because you know that you haven't broken anything. You don't have to exercise your brain to breaking point trying to work out if you've broken anything important. Your tests will tell you. So back to how do you actually achieve this? So back to the get. So you want to get widget number 4, but widget number 4 doesn't exist in the database. So now we've got this golden rule, which is your tests can only use the public interfaces of your system. So what do you do? Well, conveniently for us, in this case, we've made a CRUD system. So we can have the test use the create endpoint, which will then return the ID, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to find it again. And then you can test the read endpoint and pull that value back. And if you wanted to do some cleanup, you could do the delete endpoint as well. So you are actually able to test this system completely outside in, including setup, teardown, cleanup, as long as you have the public behavior available to you. I'm not going to pretend that that's always easy. So there are some definite challenges around this. So there's a couple of things. So one is, well, what if your system doesn't have a delete function? Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe in this case, the cleanup really wasn't that important. Maybe you can write your tests so they don't stand on each other, so that they all have their own independent state. The what if you don't have a create? Well, that's not really been a thing in my experience, because systems all have to be used. So either they set up internal state sufficiently to be usable as part of their normal setup and deployment, in which case your tests can rely on that, or they have the ability to add data in some form. And it doesn't have to be APIs, it could be user interfaces in web browsers, it could be messaging based systems. The important point is that it's a public interface that your users could use, even if your users are other systems. One of the things that's come up as a particularly tricky challenge is maybe something about the internal behavior is actually important. So a really good example of this is caching. So I want to know that when I first ask for record 4, it's got no cache, it manages to read it, maybe from a third party system. So maybe you've got, you're testing a microservice, you have to mock out some third party thing that it wants to be able to read from. And on the second hit, you want to know that it was a cache hit. There's a really elegant answer to this, which is that if you're, so particularly for SaaS systems and APIs and what have you, if you're running this system in production, you actually want to know the same information, and the magic answer is telemetry. So as part of making your system supportable in production, you want to add a lot of telemetry, which is the new cool thing instead of logging. Mostly it's got some metrics and some better ability for log aggregators to interpret what these logs actually mean. OpenTelemetry is a standard that's worth looking into if you haven't already checked it out. And that counts as an externally visible behavior of the system. So you can add telemetry to your internals of your code that emit telemetry for a cache hit and a cache miss, and then you can assert on that. So in your test, you can say, read record 4, assert that the telemetry emitted a cache miss, read record 4 again, assert that the telemetry emitted a cache hit. You are not testing, you're not giving your tests at this point knowledge of the internals of your system. This is still the external surface area that needs to continue to work. If you broke that telemetry, then your ability to observe the behavior of that system in production would be broken, and you don't want that. So you would want your tests to catch this. The other thing about... I'm running out of steam. I'm sure you'll be relieved to hear that I will stop soon. Much as we all love talking about testing. It's really late. I shouldn't be recording this at this time of night. Not that you know what time it is. I'll mention one thing briefly, which is that you might be tempted to bend these rules sometimes. So a little bit like giving up a bit on automated testing. If you don't have 100% coverage, then your velocity starts to drop fairly drastically. It has to be a golden rule. It has to be adhered to religiously. The same applies to the outside in and knowledge of internals. This is a rule you have to apply religiously. I'm not saying you don't have the test pyramid, so you can still have tests that test the internals, but the golden part of this is the outside-in user-facing tests. Those are the ones that are critical. The internal ones you might rewrite and throw away. They should be a little bit more disposable. And so long as your outside-in stuff is fine, you have really high confidence that this system is still behaving as designed. If you allow that coverage from the user's perspective, if you allow to bend the rules of internal access even a little bit, because this is a particularly hard one to solve, I think we should just do this, it would be more pragmatic. Just like allowing your coverage to slip, you lose a lot of the benefits very, very quickly of having that really clear separation. Because as soon as you introduce, and you're likely to introduce it in sort of reusable components like setup and teardown, you're immediately back into that thing where you can't just turn the innards of the system on its head without breaking tests. And it's only when you have complete ability to do that without breaking any tests that you really gain the full benefits of the ongoing speed and confidence that you gain by preventing your tests having internal knowledge, as well as ensuring that you have full coverage from the user perspective. Cool. I think there was one more thing on the outside in. I don't know. I'm going to give up. That, I think, pretty much covers my thoughts. I might... anything else I think of, I will drop into the blog post in my Blicky style Tim Wise blog, that timwise.co.uk blog that is hosted as a Jekyll site on Git, so the blog posts can be trivially updated when I have better thinking to drop in, and I will drop in a bit of this stuff that's not currently in there. So yeah, that was a journey, but I'm much, much happier in my understanding of the conceptual reasons for why we write tests a particular way now, and I am much more equipped to argue clearly as to why it is worth the additional effort to do the outside-in user perspective testing, which is harder but is much more powerful, and why your tests shouldn't have internal knowledge of the system. Oh, I thought of one more thing. It's a relatively small thing, but worth mentioning. One of the things that came up on the CRUD system example where you're doing CRUD for widgets is if you have a create and a read endpoint, you want to test for both. So I have experimented in the past with having more kind of user journey tests where, you know, there's a test that tests more like a business journey. They are problematic generally because they, as you add and remove features over time, what you find is you have to read this big test, understand the whole thing, work out which bit you need to change. And when you've got a lot of them, that becomes really difficult. And I've definitely felt the pain of my own misjudgment on that one. So it is good, where possible, to have fairly small tests that test relative. I mean, you know, when you're testing a whole system, you probably want to ease off on the list a little bit. You maybe test a couple of pieces in one test, but ideally you want to, you know, test the create endpoint in one test, test the read endpoint in another endpoint. So the thing that came up is, well, if I test the create endpoint and that has to read it to verify that it got persisted, and I test the read endpoint and that has to create it in order to test, in order to have anything to read, well, surely that's the same test, right? But we want both tests. So what do we do? And for me, the answer is just a bit of code style, which is about what you emphasize in the actual code that you write in the test. So by wrapping things in functions and methods, you can hide details. And by not wrapping things and leaving them at the top level, you can really expose things that matter. So in terms of testing the API, I would perhaps have some setup, which is just like literally a function called, you know, setup widget, which returns four and has the name. So when you're reading the test, it's really clear that it's setup. It just so happens that setup uses the public API. And then the read, you can see it's like HTTP get widget number four. And it's, okay, that's my act. And then the assert is, does it match? So you have these two tests, and one of them emphasizes the create and one of them emphasizes the read. So even though practically both of them will fail if either of them break, the tests read differently because it's the intent that matters in this particular case. And I really will stop now. So that's been an exhausting software should be free, probably a bit of a dry subject, but I think in terms of engineering quality and ongoing performance for a client or a employer or a boss, this is just critical. And I think most of the teams I've been on have got this wrong. I honestly do. Like, myself included, the best will in the world. We know we need tests. We want to write a quality system, but we just keep running into this. We end up with too much manual testing, too much uncertainty, regressions coming in, inability to change a system because it breaks all the tests. And these things that I've laid out here really make a huge difference. So tests from the perspective of a user, super important. The tests not having knowledge of internals, super important. If you can stick to those and do the hard work to make those happen, then you can truly sustain that velocity far into the future. Obviously, as systems get more and more complicated and you add more and more things, it does get slower and harder, but nothing like as slow and hard as it gets if you can't maintain your tests, if you can't refactor your system, if you can't be sure that you're shipping without regressions. So with that, this has been Software Should Be Free, and may all your tests be free and green, and I will see you another day. Goodbye.